Devices Radio Network.
Franco is pretty smart, but Franco is a child. And when it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Advices Radio. I'm your host, Scott McNally, and you're listening to episode number 86. I'm recording this intro on Christmas Eve. I just got back from the gym. I had probably one of the best workouts I've had in a while. It was chest. It was one of those workouts where you're kind of like just like out of breath, just slightly in between sets. And I kind of found myself like pacing back and forth, and like twitching a little bit, you know, swearing every once in a while. It was good. It was cathartic. And I'm glad that there was only like one other guy in the gym and he kept his distance. I personally would have kept my distance too. It was good though. And now I'm here with you guys recording this tonight. You're going to hear this on the day after Christmas, if you're listening when it comes out. All the gifts have been open, all of the meals have been had, and whether you had a good time or not, we are careening toward the new year. Yeah, it's coming at us, right? It's like next week. I think we're all thinking about that right now, which is a good thing. There's a lot of great things coming up, and I got a couple great things coming up today. Now, I've got two interviews. They're very different from one another. We are going to start out with Ron Harris. He's in charge of all things at Muscular Development. And after that, we are going to go to Jerry Peacock, as well as Matthew and Jared Young. They're going to talk about Quest of the Muscle Nerd, a cool documentary that is coming out. So for starters, Ron Harris, like I said, in charge of all things muscular development, the print and the online stuff. I hadn't been following a lot of MD for a while. Yeah, I know you guys have because I get links from you on various things and I appreciate that stuff. Thank you. But I hadn't been following it for some time. I got a chance to say hello to Ron. I'm sure he doesn't remember it at Chicago Pro, but I just thought he was a really cool dude. I really appreciate everything that's coming out over at MD. And I wanted a chance to get to know him a little bit better and to get a chance for you guys to get to know him. So some of you may already know a lot of these stories. I don't know. I really don't. But I had a hell of a time talking to the guy. And let me tell you something. If you like early 90s bodybuilding stories from Venice Beach and like what it was like growing up and working there and training, you're going to like what Ron has to say. He's got some really cool stuff and he's just a cool dude. I appreciated his time. After that, we are going to talk about Quest of the Muscle Nerd. So this is, we're totally different. So if you split this show up and do two different cardio sessions, which it's December, you're probably not close to any shows, so you shouldn't be doing a ton of cardio. You could do, you know, like the Ron segment for one session, and then we'll do the Muscle Nerds. That's what they call themselves. Not to be confused with the Bodybuilding Nerds. So CrossFit. I'm still getting used to saying that word, CrossFit. It's costuming and bodybuilding combined. Think like Comic-Con. Think how people get dressed up there. And some of those guys and gals invest like a ton of money, thousands of dollars. They get into that in the documentary. But here's the thing. Now think the costuming and think actually having the muscle to fill out, say, like a He-Man costume, Superman costume. There's people that are really into this kind of thing. And they created a contest, a CrossFit contest. It was Jerry's idea. Matthew and Jared Young decided to create a documentary about this. And it's a good movie. It's entertaining. If you don't know anything about like Comic-Con type stuff, then you are going to learn some things. It's they pit two guys against one another who are both training and putting their costumes together to compete together on stage. And it's a lot of fun. It's entertaining. If you don't know much about cons, then you are going to learn some stuff just like I did. Plus, there's a clever sense of humor throughout the whole film. I think you guys will really enjoy it. Everybody I know that has watched it enjoyed it. I watched it once. I think I'm going to watch it again. They're entering South by Southwest right now. They're trying to get it into all the film festivals. So the more hype that this thing can get, the better. I'm excited. I really hope that they do well. They're good guys, and you could hear in the interview, they all have good hearts. So guys, thanks for listening to everything that we've done through 2018. I appreciate everybody's questions to the question shows, all of your feedback. Thanks for following us. 2019 is upon us. We are going to push hard. It's one of those things I ask myself, how far can we push this? And that's what we're going to find out. So thanks for being with me, and thank you for listening to Advices Radio. Welcome back to Advices Radio. I'm your host, Scott McNally, and today I have with me Ron Harris. Ron, thanks for being with me, brother.
Thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
So you are the fixture over there at Muscular Development. What is your exact title there?
I have two titles. I am the online editor of the website, and I'm senior writer of the magazine.
No kidding. So you cover both facets of
absolutely
both the written word and now tell me, because I think that a lot of people have said, you know, the magazine print is dying. How are you guys dealing with that?
I can't deny that. Nobody can really deny that. I mean, when I was a kid, I'm 49 years old. You know, I remember newsstands stretching, you know, 12 feet wide and 6 feet high.
Yeah.
You know, there'd be like 300 titles at any given newsstand to choose from. Thick magazines were thick, full of ads. You know, the world has changed. We have the internet. Things have gone digital. And, you know, MD has definitely had to adapt. I think that's why, especially in the, it's almost 2 years now that I've had the job of online editor. I've really tried to grow the website and get a lot more different content, because I realize younger people don't want to read the way they did in the old days. And I can't blame them. Everything's on your phone. It's on your tablet, mostly your phone. So you want to create as much of that as possible. We still do have the print magazine. It's streamlined. It's not 400 pages like it used to be.
Okay.
But I do my best. We do our best. It's a whole, obviously it's a huge team effort, to keep things in there content wise that you're not going to find anywhere else, and make it worth reading.
Right on. Now, you know, I'm going to back up here for a second, and I have to be honest with you. So, you know, I followed Muscular Development through the early 2000s. And when I first got, I fell back in love with the sport of bodybuilding around 30. And I started reading all the magazines, and I was listening to John Romano and Dave Palumbo on the No Bull radio show they had. And they left. And when they left, you took over. And
that's actually not true. There was a gap. There was a huge gap, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to make people think that I've been doing it so much longer.
No, who left?
They left it to go form RX Muscle, like, the day they were fired.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't become, that was 10 years ago. That was 2008, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And I took this job in January of 2017. So we had a few people as online editors. We had Robbie Durand, who was...
Oh, that's who I was thinking of. Okay.
Flex Magazine. We had Sean Andros, who was also affiliated with Flex Magazine. Does a lot with the NPC now. We had Adina Zanoli.
Oh, yeah.
So and David Bay. So we've had, and I might even be missing some, at least four people had that job between the Romano Palumbo era and when I took over.
Okay. So as you could tell, I had not followed along. But the thing is, I guess the point that I'm getting to is that, you know, I start looking at what you guys are doing now, and I start seeing your name come up. And for all I knew, you were the only guy, because I hadn't been paying attention.
Oh.
But what I'm seeing is you are putting out so much content, and I feel like I've been missing out on this. Apparently I've only been missing out on it for a couple of years. But the reason I wanted to bring you on is because, as somebody who creates content myself, I'm really impressed by the amount of stuff that you continually pump out. And I wanted to talk to you about that. And I wanted to talk to you today about your passion for bodybuilding. I wanted to talk to you about like what you're personally doing with the sport and just what your outlook is on life as a person that's covering the sport, because you obviously, you must love this sport.
I couldn't be doing this this has been my full-time job one way or another since 1991 when I was 21 years old.
No kidding.
I would have burned out long, long ago if I didn't have a real passion for it.
No kidding. What are you doing?
People in this business that, I'll get into that. There are people in this business who, I don't want to really put them down, but I kind of think of them as tourists. They could be covering golf or NASCAR. It doesn't matter. Mm. It's a job to them. They're not bodybuilders. They don't have a passion for it. And I'm not saying everyone on the media side has to be a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
But I think to do a service to it, to do justice to the athletes and to the coverage and all that, you have to have some sort of real interest and passion for it.
Okay. And where did you start? You said at 21 was when you first started working in the industry.
Okay. So a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. When I was 21, I was doing my last semester in college. I went to Emerson College in Boston, and they had a program for seniors called the LA Semester. It was supposed to be your final semester of school, where you'd go out to LA and work in. You'd take two classes, and then you'd do 15 or 20 hours a week as an intern somewhere in your field of study. We were all communication majors, and I looked it up, and the only two places out there that were looking for interns I had any interest in were the TV show American Gladiators, which I always thought Gladiators. Oh, yeah. That'd be cool to work on that show.
Hell yeah, who wouldn't?
But yeah, and the other one was American Muscle magazine on ESPN, which held my interest a lot more.
Oh yeah.
So for people that don't know this, ESPN for well over a decade had a bodybuilding show on it called American Muscle magazine. It was a magazine format show. It had contest coverage, athlete profiles. It had the Valio workout. It had the Twin Lab muscle meals, which John Romano was the chef.
Yeah.
It would show you how to cook up all kinds of stuff. It had a gossip section at times. It was a really cool show. And I became an intern there. A guy named Lou Zwick, who was still around promoting the Muscle Mania events and the fitness universe and all that stuff. He was the producer. And he hired me after a couple months. And I was 21. I was in this weird position because a couple of the older guys, they weren't that much older looking back, they were producers and they sort of went off to do other things, which opened up an opportunity for me. So I was directing segments and in the edit bay at 21 years old.
No kidding.
Going to shows like the Olympia, the Ironman Pro. It was pretty overwhelming, but it was one of those fake it till you make it things where, you know, I was really in over my head, but I asked a lot of questions. I had people I could turn to for help and advice. But to be a kid from Boston, a bodybuilding super fan, which I was, and immediately I'm out here meeting my idols. It was crazy. It was a magical time. I feel sorry for the current generation because they're never going to experience that, because back then, 1991, 2, 3, 4, you went out to Venice Beach. That was still really the mecca. There were tons and tons of pro bodybuilders. You'd see them walking around on the streets. You'd see them in every restaurant. Gold's Gym Venice was like walking into a magazine back then. So many stars train there. Any time of day or night, you'd see somebody you knew from the sport. And I was just in a great spot.
That's so cool. Can you think of anybody in particular that really stands out to you at that time when you were 21? Because I know what you're talking about. I know that feeling where you're like, I just can't believe I'm meeting this person right now.
Yeah, I would say that year, the first year was probably the most, you know, the fresh, it was all brand new to me. So I would say in spring of 91, when I had only been there a couple months, we were the ones who made Lee Haney's, Twin Lab, which at the time was still owned by the Bleckman brothers. Twin Lab had Lee Haney under contract, and he had a supplement line coming out. Today it would have been called like the Lee Haney Signature Series or something, but back then it was just called the Mass Stack or something. I can't quite remember what it was called.
I vaguely remember those.
But if you bought, it came with like a big giant, one of those Mass Gain tubs. It was like the size of a paint can or bed. Yeah. It was huge.
Yeah.
It came with protein bars that were like 1,000 calories. It was So anyway, we were doing we were shooting the video for them, that would, a training video that would go along with that. If you bought this Lee Haney mass stack, Twin Lab mass fuel, or whatever it was, you got the video. So I was there as a production assistant watching, at the time, seven-time Mr. Olympia, you know, show everyone how he worked out every body part.
Holy cow.
I'm sitting there with my jaw open, like, is this really happening? And around that time, I met, I was able to work with guys like Rich Gaspari. That was the year, was that the year? Yeah. The first time I ever met Flex Wheeler was that year. He was still an amateur.
Okay.
He and Mike Matarazzo co-hosted the show. You know, our show always had a different, we had people that would host it that were like more hosting personality types, but we would also have a lot of guest hosts.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was much more fun, even though it was some of these people that was, they were not meant to be on-air personalities, but they did the best they could. So Mike Matarazzo and Flex Wheeler co-hosted the show about 4 or 5 weeks out from the USA that Mike eventually won. And that was the first time I met Flex, and I had met Mike a couple times already. We'd shot him, but man, it was just, it was such a great time because they were egging each other on and snide remarks, and you know, they didn't really like each other all that much.
That's so cool. This ties so much together because I've talked to other people who had been on the show and they've told me their experiences, you know, with everything that had gone on back then. How did that affect your bodybuilding at the time? You're a young guy. You love the sport. A lot of us, you know, you could have just as easily been in Boston training in your basement, but now you're out there in Venice and you're being influenced by people like Lee Haney.
Yeah. I mean, I can't say, you know, back at that time, I was still trying to learn and absorb, and I still had a lot of learning to do as far as training and nutrition, but I was definitely trying to pick up anything I could from these people. Even guys like the late Don Ross, who was actually a former editor of Muscular Development. Don had been a professional wrestler. He had been a professional bodybuilder in this WBBG organization in the 70s. And he was just an incredible personality. He's such an intelligent, funny guy. And he knew a lot about training. And it's one of those things where here I am at 49, looking back at some of the things these guys, some of the wisdom they were trying to impart to me that I sort of brushed off or glossed over at the time, thinking, just a tiny example. I remember Don, World Gym Venice, which is no longer there, unfortunately, where Joe Gold used to hang out with all his old buddies, and Arnold would train in the morning.
Yeah.
Don, that's where Don liked to train. A lot of the older guys loved that place because it was a lot quieter than Gold's Venice, which was a couple blocks away.
Was that the gym they wouldn't let you play music at and stuff?
Correct. There was no music allowed. If you dropped weights, he would kick you out. It was his personal. That's where Joe Gold and his friends from the old days just hung out.
Okay.
It was a beautiful place. Huge wooden beams everywhere, and skylights. A lot of the equipment Joe had made himself. A lot of the equipment that you see in the movie Pumping Iron and the original Golds,
yeah.
he had there, as well as other things he had built and tons of more modern pieces too. It was a really cool gym. I feel sorry for the bodybuilders today that they'll never experience Venice the way it used to be. But getting back to Don, he was outside. They had an outside workout area there, so you could have the fresh sea air. The ocean was like a block away.
Whew.
And in the sunshine, they had mirrors there. You know, in the sunlight, everybody looks jacked.
You're killing me, man. I'm in Detroit in the middle of December right now, thinking about all this.
Boston winters are right up there with Michigan, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
But he was doing partials on a hammer strength machine, like from the top, just the top few inches. And I remember coming over, and Don, I said, what are you doing? Like making a face at him, like you're an idiot. He's like, no, this is, you know, partial reps. This is the strongest point of the range of motion. I'm like, yeah, whatever. The only thing that works is full reps. You know, I thought I knew everything. So yeah, at 21, I'd say I was kind of immune to some extent to some of the things I should have been learning because I thought I knew everything.
Fair enough, man. Fair enough.
I knew very little.
It's good you could say that because then there had to have been a point where you realized that you could learn. When did you start competing?
Oh, I started competing back in 1989, back when I was still here in Boston.
Oh, okay.
There was an organization back then called ANBC, American Natural Bodybuilding Conference, based out of Rhode Island, and it was huge in the Northeast. They eventually expanded a little bit to the rest of the country, but probably at least 3/4 of all their contests were held on the Northeast and the Eastern Seaboard areas.
Okay.
So I started competing at 89 when I was 19, turned 20 later that year. I did a few shows with them. 1990, interesting. I did their Massachusetts championship. And at that particular show, I was 20, so I couldn't do teenage class. And some of the shows had junior classes and some of them didn't. Junior, I think, was 23 and under or 22 and under.
Huh.
So I had to jump in a men's open. So I was in the men's medium class. It was like 25 guys. Shows were bigger back then.
Yeah.
Anyone knows. Late 80s and early 90s. So I'm sure I was toward the back of the pack in the placings. I'm sure I was way down there because I didn't understand how to get in shape or anything. But second place was a guy named Tito Raymond.
Oh, no kidding.
And I was looking at him, and I was much more impressed with him than the winner because he had much better shape and structure, and I saw this kid was going places. But I was also hoping he was much older. When I found out he was 20 years old, too, it was just I was crestfallen. I was like, oh, man, I thought he was at least like 25, 26.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm doing something wrong.
So when you went out to California then, did you continue competing out there as well, or how long were you out there?
I was supposed to be there for one semester. So I was supposed to be there from January till May of 91. I ended up not leaving until October of 2000.
No kidding. So you stayed basically a decade.
I stayed because, you know, he offered me a job. I hadn't even finished the internship. And Lou, he wanted me to be there he needed me there full time. And it wasn't a problem. I could still do the classes we took were at night, so it wasn't a big deal. And at that point, I didn't have much school left. So I stayed there, and I was engaged at the time. Even though, here I am, 21 years old. My fiance, who I'm still married to, we have two wonderful kids.
Dude, congratulations, but, man. That in itself is, you know,
in this industry,
huge.
That's,
yeah,
27 years, that's like bodybuilding. That's like 60, 70 years of marriage.
Right, right.
So, yeah, unfortunately, I had to tell her, you know, I'm not leaving. I'm not coming back. So I'm going to get an apartment, and you can move out here, and we can live out here. And that's what happened.
Okay. And so she went for that. She came out and lived with you out there. Did you continue to train? Were you, like, at Golds and stuff like that?
So Lou had his offices for the company's still called American Sports Network, based in a place called Rosemead, California, which is in the San Gabriel Valley. Out toward Pasadena would be the biggest, the closest big city you probably have heard of. So we were a good 30 miles east of Venice, but I had to train at Venice, of course.
Yeah.
So 4 or 5 days a week, I'd be going out there to train Gold's Venice late nights. I think we'd usually get there at like 7 or 8 o'clock at night. Wouldn't get back home till like sometimes 11 or so. But yeah, I trained at Gold's Venice that year and Gold's Fullerton, which is like where Sean Ray trained, Troy Zuccolato.
Okay.
Dennis Newman used to train there. All the Orange County people. That was the that's a place that Milos later bought and changed the name to Coliseum Gym.
Oh, okay.
But it was a Gold's Gym for many years before that.
No kidding.
So those are my two spots. I was always at one of those two places. Yeah, I couldn't, you know, I was still a wannabe. Everything I wore had to have some sort of bodybuilding, unless I was working. You know, Lou insisted we look sort of professional. We'd wear like polo shorts and jeans, but the rest of the time I'd be in, you know, those clown pants, the Michael tops, tank tops. Everybody had to know I was a bodybuilder. I was just desperate to be a bodybuilder.
That's funny, man. It's funny how you can see that in the younger people today, but I'm right there with you, man. I was totally guilty of it too for longer than I would care to share.
Oh yeah. Every shirt I wore had to either say Gold's Gym, World's Gym, or T Michael. Had to.
That's funny, man. So that the whole time you were out there, then you were working for the TV show?
Yeah, I worked for them until about 98. So I was there from 91 to 98. At which time I either quit or was fired. That's still kind of open to interpretation.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of work. It was hard work. It was long hours. It's TV production. TV production in general is long, hard hours, as anyone who's ever done it knows. And I tried working in film production for a little bit after that. Worked on some TV commercials. And that was even worse. That was like I did one for, it's not Mountain Dew, but it was something very similar. And the director was Mick G, who went on to do Charlie's Angels and some other movies.
Oh, no kidding.
But we were working. We had three different commercials to make in 3 days. And I think I slept like 3 hours in those 3 days. We went from location to location, setting up, breaking down. And I said, I don't like this. And I went and got my personal certification, personal training certification. I had been writing on the side for a few years anyway at that point, since 92. But I didn't have enough. I wasn't making enough money to pay the bills with that yet. So I became a trainer and did that for almost 2 years while I got my writing up to the volume I needed so that I could make a living and pay a, you know, pay a mortgage or some, pay my bills with it and support my, at that point, I had my second child in 99. So I needed money.
I can relate to that. I went to school for photography, and when I got into the industry and was working in commercial photography, I could see exactly what you're saying. They are very long, grueling hours. I decided to quit. And at that time I didn't know what to do. Cause you were a bodybuilder at heart. You were involved in this TV show, but it's like, what does that translate to if you don't want to do that? It sounds like you almost had to kind of start over.
I did. I mean, I had been in TV production. That had been my job since from age 21 to 28, 29. And yeah, I didn't know. Like, now what do I do? I mean, I knew I could train people, but that wasn't, I enjoyed it, but I didn't want to do that for the rest of my life. My hat's off to anyone that can do it long-term. Unless you're making crazy, crazy money, I would never do it again. You're in there sometimes as early as 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't leave that gym till 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night, you know, with breaks in between. But luckily the writing, I knew I was a decent writer, and I never, ever claimed to be the best writer or even like a great writer. I'm a good writer, and I work fast, and I'm reliable. And I found that combination would take me pretty far, because editors love to give you an assignment and not have to worry about it ever again. So here's the assignment. This is the date we need it by. And they don't want to hear about it again. They don't want to hear, well, I can't get a hold of this guy, or, well, my cat got sick. And they don't want to hear your problems. They have enough on their plate. So if you're somebody who can make their jobs easier, and I made the jobs easier I have to give a lot of credit. I would never have been able to be a full-time writer had it not been for the late Robert Kennedy in Muscle Mag International, and his good friend Johnny Fitness. What's his real name, John?
I'm not sure. I can't
even think. Gino. His real name was Gino.
Okay.
Gino Edwards. He's still alive, I hope. Great guy. So they gave me plenty of assignments for Muscle Mag, as well as their men's fitness publication, which was at the time called American Health and Fitness, I think.
Okay.
So the 2 years I was training people, I was writing my ass off, cranking out articles. Also, I was writing for a T-Mag. I think it was still called Testosterone at the time. But an Iron Man. And I wrote for them for many, many years. They were the first, gotta give credit again, the first people to publish me was Iron Man. So Steve Holman was the guy who looked over my work and said, yeah, this is good enough.
So you had to be so just self-driven, because I feel like you could have easily slipped. And it was a fear I had in my own life after, you know, I decided, well, I don't know what else to do with my life. I got to do something else completely. It would have been easy to just kind of slip into mediocrity and continue being a personal trainer. You must have been really self-driven to continue putting these articles out and almost have faith in yourself that one day you could make that into something.
I did. And, you know, having a drive. I mean, I had a mortgage. I owned a house. I already had one daughter. We had our first child in 94 and our second 99. So I was very, very motivated, because my wife's always worked. She's a very hardworking woman. But, you know, these, as you know, today's society in the United States, you need two incomes if you're going to have a decent lifestyle. So I was driven by money, of course, but I also knew I loved writing. I could write just about anything about the sport. I loved doing interviews, profiles, training, did so many training. I wish I'd kept better track, but I believe I've written well over 5,000 articles and columns over the years, well over.
Wow. Talk to me about this motivation. And the reason I'm asking is because, you know, I see a lot of people, especially people on social media, people that are interested in fitness, people that want to figure out how can they make it their life somehow. You know, I see a lot of people that tell me, you know, like hashtag grinding, stuff like that. But what does it really take to make this into a reality?
A lot of people are making a living off the industry now, far more than ever before. And that's, in large part due to the internet creating a lot more opportunities. You can, anybody can come up with a YouTube channel, and if you have something to say that people want to hear, a good example is Nick Strength and Power, Nick Miller.
Yeah.
You know, who that's someone who would have never been able to make money off the industry that way because it didn't exist before. There were no YouTubers before there was a YouTube. You know, he would have had to become a writer for the magazines or an editor, something like that. But now we have a lot more opportunity, so people can become online coaches. That's a huge, huge business. There are thousands and thousands of people making a living that way. Prep coaches is a booming industry. YouTube channels, it's you don't get as many people asking. I used to get hammered constantly, day in, day out. How can I become a writer? How can I do this? And I don't get that as much anymore because, well, A, the magazines aren't what they used to be. They're not. They're all gone except for, you know, even Flex magazine is a section of muscle and fitness now.
Yeah.
Muscular development is the last of the major titles left. So I don't get people asking me, occasionally I still do. But how can you make a living in this? There's so many ways now, and it's social media has given you ways.
I guess, I'm not asking the actual, like, what right. things can we do? But there was something about you that was unique in that you were willing to put the work in. Because I see a lot of people that want it and that they say that they're putting themselves out there. But at the end of the day, the people who actually follow through, I feel like, are a far fewer.
Yeah, you see hashtag grind and no team, no sleep and all that. But what are you actually producing? You have to produce something.
That's what I'm getting at, I guess.
Either blogs or videos, articles. You have to be producing something. Otherwise, what are you really grinding on? What are you doing?
Yeah.
You have to figure out, I want to make a living in the sport. What can I do? What am I really good at? And for me, that was writing. I knew I loved the sport. I loved competing. I loved training. I could talk about training all day. I could interview top stars all day. And so that's what I did. I turned it into a passion, into a career.
Right on. Where are you at with your personal bodybuilding now?
Struggling to maintain.
I hear that.
I'm banged up. I'm really banged up. We would need an entire other podcast to talk about all the issues and injuries and this and that. But it's part of the reason I don't even train with anybody anymore. I had a good training partner up until recently, but I had to realize I'm not a good training partner for anybody anymore because they say, well, let's do deadlifts. I say, oh, I can't do deadlifts.
Mm.
They'll say, let's do some shoulder presses. I say, you know what? I can't even do shoulder presses. I can do maybe a machine and not go that heavy. But yeah, I'm still trying to improve. I'm a meathead at heart. I'm still in the gym every day almost. I do 3-on-1 off with the weights.
Okay.
And to be very honest with you, Scott, I would be more productive at my job. I would get more done if I wasn't a bodybuilder, because I wouldn't have to eat every 2 to 3 hours.
Oh yeah.
I wouldn't have to cook all that food, wash all the dishes. I wouldn't be at the gym for 2 hours just about every day and traveling to the gym and coming back. I understand why people sort of put their bodybuilding aside if they want to be very productive in a business, because you can't really do both. I remember Dana Lynn Bailey in an interview maybe a couple of years ago, not even that long ago, she was talking about intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
Which, I don't like the idea of going 10, 12 hours without eating, but she said, I get so much more done in that part of the day when I'm not eating.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
Geez, you're right. Because it's always, I need to eat again sooner. I just ate.
Right.
I need to eat. You're always looking at the clock. You're always thinking about it. It's part of the reason my son trains and everything, but I don't want him to be overly serious about it, at least for a few more years, because you're a slave to the eating.
How old is he?
He's 19.
Okay.
He's in his first year of college.
Oh, right on. Yeah, I could see that. So what does your day look like now? I mean, because if when I go to musculardevelopment.com, I see you all over it, and you constantly are putting material out. And being somebody who produces content myself, I know that you have to put in so much work, and you have to be so organized to do that.
Yeah, it's a juggling act because, I'm also juggling the magazine articles and features and columns and sections. I'm not the only writer, but I do a lot of the writing for the magazine. I do almost usually all the features or most of the features, and I do a lot of the sections. So I have to sort of chase down people for, as well as people to do interviews for the Skype.
Mm.
And then, you know, I'm sure you've dealt with people that are having technical difficulties with their Skype
every day.
You're supposed to talk to them at 9 a.m. and they say, "Oh, I need another hour, bro." And then you get another hour and say, "Yeah, we're going to have to do this later, bro." You know, you have to be very flexible because people have, especially bodybuilders, you know, their priority is going to be their training and their eating, especially if they're getting ready for a show. And you have to be understanding of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen you around too at the various shows. I think when I introduced myself, I've been to a few this last season, but I want to say it was the Chicago Pro. Were you there?
Yeah. Chicago. That's where we met. You're from Michigan. So,
yep.
Yeah.
So do you travel around in person to a lot of the shows?
Only to the ones that we cover. We don't cover as many as we used to.
Okay.
For sure. We used to have more people that would go back and forth. Like when Sean Ray was still with us.
Yeah.
He would go to some of the shows and cover them, and I would go to some of the shows and cover them. But, you know, now we have myself and we have my good friend Giles Thomas.
Oh, yeah.
Who comes over for the major U.S. shows like the Olympia and the Arnold, but he also covers pretty much everything that if we're going to cover anything in Europe, he's the one that goes and does that for us. And him and his girl Rosie Rascal Hart, they do an awesome job. I can't thank them enough.
That's cool, man. So what do you see for the future? You know, looking forward, you know, seeing the way that everything is going toward the internet now. Where's muscular development going and where would you like to drive it?
Yeah, it's because everything is digital now. I mean, the magazine, I believe, will still always be around, or at least for a few more years, but the website is where I really want to grow it, which is why we're starting new things. I mean, I started, when I came on board, we had a lot of training videos, which we don't have as many of those anymore, but that was about all we had.
Okay.
We did have Sean Ray kept the radio show going for a little while. But I started that. I'm a tech dummy. It took me. Anybody who watched the first, I'm embarrassed to say it, probably the first 20 or 30 episodes of the Ronline Report, which is the Skype interview show I do for the website. It was just rife with technical difficulties and audio problems and flashing lights and all kinds of.
Thankfully, the bodybuilding community is very forgiving for that kind of stuff.
Well, there were a lot of comments, but you know, they were most of them were warranted.
Yeah,
It was rough. It was hard to learn how to do that as an old man with no teenagers to help me figure stuff out. But I want more of that. We just started our own podcast. Finally,
What's it called?
It is called MD Global Muscle Radio. It's hosted by Giles Thomas.
Nice.
He does it over there at a studio called Pumped Media over in the UK. And his co-host for all the shows so far has been this big Jamaican guy from Norway named AJ, who's about 6'6" and 400 pounds.
No kidding.
He's a bodybuilding super fan. So they do Global Muscle Radio. It's on SoundCloud and it's on YouTube. And their first, Giles did a bang up job. Only two shows have posted so far. The first was Phil Heath. The second one was Flex Lewis. Monday is going to be Zach Kahn. And they also did an episode with Tony Freeman.
Kick ass. So, that's a great lineup right there.
You have to have a podcast. I mean, if you want to really serve everybody, you have to have every category. So you need interview videos, you need podcasts, you need informational things. It can be controversial at times, but we have a weekly show with Dr. Thomas O'Connor called Ask the Anabolic Doc.
Mm.
And sometimes people don't agree with the things he says. He's very opinionated, very intelligent guy. We have shows, you know, Kevin Leveroni does a show that I'd like to say weekly, but Kevin's a hard guy to track down at times. So
I've heard.
I'm happy to get him when I get him. He does a show called How I See It. And I just want to blast out tons of great content. That's my goal. Keep doing more and more good content.
So really, I mean, what it sounds like to me is that you are every day continuously in contact with a lot of people. There's a lot, basically, like you're spinning a lot of plates at once is what it comes down to.
Yeah, you have to. I think anybody that does this, whether it be Palumbo or Generation Iron, I think any of them would probably be in the same position where
absolutely
you're working on one thing, but you have to always be lining up the next 3, 4, 5 things.
Oh yeah. No question.
At any given moment.
No question. Well, man, this has been great. Is there anything that I'm missing that we haven't covered here? Anything, any aspects? Because like I said, I hadn't followed MD over really the past, you know, decade or so, but it's something that you've gravitated me back toward it. I wanted to give a chance to my listeners who haven't been following MD to kind of get back into it. Is there anything else that you would share with us, people who haven't been following along?
Yeah, I would encourage people to go over to musculardevelopment.com. We have a very, very active forum called No Bull Forum, where we have very spirited debates, post up a lot of crazy pictures, videos. There's all, at any given moment, there are 10 to 20 discussions going on, very any topic related to the industry you can think of. And we have a lot of fun over there. It's sometimes it gets pretty heated. Sometimes I've had to ban people when they get out of line. But for the most part, we just have a good time. It's almost like a locker room where soup, you know, we're all fans. Everyone over there is a fan. If I find someone really is a hater of the sport, they hate pro bodybuilders, they hate bodybuilding,
yeah.
And they're just basically there to stir up trouble and talk shit, you know, I get rid of them because we don't need that. I try to keep it fairly positive. You can't be 100% positive all the time because that's boring too.
Yeah.
You know, you need a balance, and it's kind of a struggle to always keep that balance. But I try to do the best I can.
What's funny is I'm listening to you say this, but I'm thinking about the time that takes to do what you just described and moderate a forum. That in itself is a job. You have a lot of stuff going on. That's kind of like my mind is blowing. That was the main reason I really wanted to bring you on, that you can do all of this all at once.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if I wasn't a bodybuilder, time-wise, it would be easier.
Yeah.
It's a challenge to manage all that. And people, I know some people will think I'm either like crazy or just holding on to the old days. But I've been a bodybuilder since I called myself that from age 18 on.
Okay.
And I'm always, in my heart, I'm always going to be a bodybuilder. Will I always weigh 225 pounds? Probably not. At some point, you know, I'll probably have to downsize and streamline, do more cardio and stretching, because there's not too many 225, 30 pound, 70 or 80 year old people walking around.
Good point.
It's not healthy to carry that much body weight in general and to eat as often as we do. We like to think it's healthy. And the other things that any substances we might use as, if you're enhanced, those aren't things you don't want to do those in anything beyond therapeutic amounts for your entire life, or else you're not going to live to be very old. Where was I going with that? I don't know. I'm always going to be a bodybuilder. It's the only reason I've been able to not burn out doing what I do and keep writing the articles and keep doing the interviews is because I am a fan of the sport. I'm not a pro. I don't look like a pro, but I am one of them. I live the lifestyle, so I can totally relate to these guys. I've been through it. I've dieted, I've competed, I'm in the gym every day like they are, I'm eating all the food, the same foods they are, so I can relate to these guys. I'm not sitting in some tower looking down on them like some journalists might be. And I understand what they're trying to do, and I don't think it's vanity or a waste of time or money. I don't look down on it because that's me. That's my life too.
Yeah.
So I think that's one reason I've been able to do it so long, and it's why, you know, the athletes have been so receptive to me over the years. They know I'm not judging them, and I'm not just in this for a paycheck. I actually care about the sport, and I actually care about the other athletes.
Yeah, and I think that comes through. That's very well said.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate your time. Guys, you know where to go. MuscularDevelopment.com. Check out the forum. And of course, check out the magazine. It's still alive and kicking. For another episode of Advices Radio with Ron Harris, I'm Scott McNally. We will see you soon. Thanks, Ron.
Thank you, Scott. You'll never say that I'm
not killing them. All right, guys, that was Ron Harris. Up next, we are going to talk about a film called Quest of the Muscle Nerd. Women are caught in webs, spinning in hawk venom, adrenaline shots. The penicillin could not get the ill in the stock. Amoxicillin's just not drilling up. The criminal cop killing hip hop, filling a minimal swap to cop. Millions of pop listeners. All right, guys, welcome back to Advices Radio. I'm Scott McNally, and up next, we are going to talk about something that I've never heard on a hardcore bodybuilding podcast before. And this is a term, it's new to me. It's called CosFit. And today I have some guys with me who put together a real kick-ass documentary that I had the pleasure of watching the other day. And yeah, let me just bring them on. First of all, Jerry, thanks for being here with me. We've got Jerry Peacock, first of all. Jerry, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. It's great to be here.
So I met you back about the time that I started my other podcast, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio.
And
you had started a comic. It was a comic strip that you put out on a semi-regular basis. And what's the name of your comic?
Well, it was just Muscle Nerds. And it started out as just a comic with just these three funny little nerdy characters who also were bodybuilders. And it stemmed into a whole community that, was kind of a surprise to me, but you know, it's grown by leaps and bounds. I still do the comic, you know, here and there, but you know, it's more about the community. So we have so many different parts.
So this is, you're telling me this has grown into a community. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, we basically are just the biggest bunch of ragtag misfits in both the nerd geek world, as well as the bodybuilding world. People who don't quite fit into either side. And so we have some people who get more into the nerdy aspect, but they want to, you know, have the fitness and the healthy, you know, healthier lifestyle, as well as people who are, you know, lean towards the bodybuilding, but still have their love of comics and fantasy art and things like that. So we all just get together to share common interests, to have the camaraderie, to be able to support each other in both training and just as individuals in life. It all goes from there.
Okay. And now getting to CrossFit, which that's a term as I say it, I get a little bit more comfortable each time because it's like a brand new word to me. You guys do this as well. What is CrossFit?
Well, CrossFit has been a growing presence in the various convention communities for several years now, and where you see people who put in time and effort into bodybuilding training, conditioning, the nutritioning, you know, all of the, you know, basically like contest preparation, but instead of getting up on a standard bodybuilding stage, they blend those elements into a costume where having, you know, a stronger, you know, physique presence is appropriate to the character that they're portraying.
Yeah, that makes sense. So like if you were to say play Superman instead of wearing like a padded suit, you could actually like fill that out with muscle is what you're telling me.
Absolutely. And we do have several Superman players.
So. Yes, I imagine. I imagine that would be like that would be the softball. That would be the easy character to pick.
Well, I mean, the first identifiable character we always see is Spartan 300 Warriors.
Oh, I bet. And so you guys have gotten into this, and somewhere along the way, you had the vision that this just might be worth making a documentary about.
Yeah, and the genesis came about, I been going to the conventions for years, and I've seen the CrossFit presence growing by leaps and bounds, and I noticed that there was no, you know, contests that blended either side. You know, it was still, you know, you had plenty of costume contests, but they only focused on the costuming aspect. And I'm like, well, you know, so much work goes into the physique. You know, why can't you reward both sides? So I started putting together the idea of bringing an event to Dragon Con, which is here in Atlanta, and was chatting with my good friends, you have Matthew and Jared Young here, and I guess they just saw lightning in a bottle.
Okay, so this sounds like a good time to bring Matthew and Jared in. So you guys are brothers, and are you twin brothers as well?
Yes, we are twin brothers.
And you guys, you're documentary filmmakers, or filmmakers in general, correct?
Yeah, yes, we're filmmakers, and we've made a few documentaries, and we have a production company in Atlanta, and you know, most importantly, we're just best friends with Jerry. I've known him for, you know, probably 8 or 9 years now. So we've been around his kind of crazy ideas, and when he pulled me aside, you know, one evening in my living room, and he said, "Hey, I'm going to try to do this competition at Dragon Con. I'm going to blend costuming and bodybuilding." And I looked over at Jared and I said, "You know, we got to make a documentary about this." And, you know, that was kind of, it was that night, I think we were filming the next Monday, when he had a phone call with Dragon Con. And Dragon Con is a convention in Atlanta. It's a lot like Comic Con. You know, you see all the people doing cosplay, and cosplay is basically costuming, where you dress up like a any sort of your favorite pop culture characters, superheroes, comic books, you know, anime,
video games.
And so we have this big convention in Atlanta. It's a sci-fi pop culture convention. And, you know, he said he had asked them if he could do this competition where he was going to blend bodybuilding, the aspects of bodybuilding, and costuming, cosplay. And so, you know, knowing Jerry, kind of knowing his, you know, quirks and eccentricities and being familiar with Muscle Nerds at this point, we just felt like it was an interesting story to tell, and a kind of a funny, fun story to tell. And I think it, you know, we kind of discovered the heart in it along the way.
I'm going to stop you for just a second, because now I watched the film, and first of all, you guys did an outstanding job. Like,
thank you. I appreciate that.
From the second, now, the, you know, when I went to, what's the URL for the website?
It's just questofthemusclenerd.com.
Okay. And is that the name of the film as well?
Yeah, Quest of the Muscle Nerd.
Okay. Now, when I first went, I went there, I saw the trailer, and you guys had me hooked immediately. I was like, I don't know what this is, but this is weird, and I got to see this.
Good.
Now, one of the things that I think you did a great job with was now Jerry, I'm going to let all the audience know. Now, Jerry is not one of the people who is competing in this. He's the guy who's putting the CrossFit contest together. You do an excellent job at capturing who Jerry is and telling that to me, the audience. Can you, and here's the challenge, can you try to give me just a little taste of who Jerry is right now through telling me?
You want me to tell you, or you want Jerry?
I want you to tell me, because he's a unique guy. You said you know that he's got some quirkiness to him. He's definitely a guy that it's like I was magnetized to him, and I want to see, like, who is this guy? I want to learn about him, but I want to try to let the audience know just a taste of who he is from you, so that they may be more interested and in better understand too what we're talking about here as far as the film goes.
Okay. Jerry Peacock is a dreamer. He's a guy with big ideas, but bigger obstacles. He's a guy that always has this weird vision that he wants to execute, but not an exact plan on how to do it.
Okay.
And so what makes Jerry so unique is it's not just his personality, but it's his heart. He has a vision for what he wants to do, and it's with the best intentions, right?
Yes.
But he has a sense of humor, and he's okay with failure, but it doesn't stop him. He's going to push through it with a smile all along the way. Now, one of the funny things about Jerry is he's obsessed with cinema, and that's kind of one of his nerdiest quirks. So we tried to incorporate a little bit of that into the film. But he's also a bodybuilding expert. I mean, he knows a lot about just bodybuilding in general, and he's into bodybuilding himself. So, you know, he's a good combination in and of himself of that really nerdy kind of geeky guy, combined with that guy that knows a lot about, you know, fitness and the gym and bodybuilding.
Okay. So we, you know, my other radio show, we are called Bodybuilding Nerds. But yeah. I think Jerry sounds like he fits right in there. He may be even more so, more than me. He may be a true bodybuilding nerd.
Yes. He might be a nerd that's a bodybuilder that's also a nerd about bodybuilding. I think he kind of encompasses all of that.
Nice. So could you guys tell me a little bit about the movie? How would you explain this to the audience right now?
Sure. You know, we set out with the intention of just telling a simple story about Jerry wanting to create this kind of unique competition, and these two guys that put their bodies, you know, through hell to compete in this competition. It's really a story about what it means to A, dream big and then create something that's a little off center. It's also a story about all those kids that were left behind in gym class, in middle school and high school. What happened to those kids? The two guys competing in it, Billy and Jonathan, you know, these are guys that were nerds growing up. They were disenfranchised. They were bullied.
Relentlessly,
you know, made to feel lesser than. And they found their home in the gym. You know, they found their confidence in the weight room. And, you know, ultimately, I think this is a movie about that. You know, the competition is sort of a backdrop to the idea of this kind of group of people. And it's a large group of people that, you know, have either A, found a home in the gym, or B, are scared of the gym because of this sort of PTSD from this middle school, you know, gym class experience, this high school gym class experience of being laughed at. And, you know, I think for group A, the people that have found their home in the weight room, I think a lot of bodybuilders, you know, can relate in the sense that it does feel like this sort of outside of the norm thing. You know, I think people can look at bodybuilding and go, why do you do that? Why do you put your body through that? You can sort of feel like you're on the outside of the middle. So I think you can relate a lot in those aspects. This is quite simply just a story about these three guys sort of finding their place in the fitness community, you know, riding that line between nerddom and bodybuilding.
Makes sense. That totally does. And you guys, I saw you brought in various people that you considered to be more or less experts as your judging panel. So I'm guessing this is something that there are people outside of just your area that are getting into this. Is this something that you guys are, because I don't know much about costuming and what goes on really with all the Comic Cons and all that stuff. Is this something that's growing throughout the country right now?
Well, yeah, it's, you know, a very large, I don't want to say subculture, but a large growing interest within, for right now, mostly just the con communities, but it spills over eventually into various aspects of pop culture. So, you know, yeah, we found four different judges for the actual event, because as the event organizer, I wanted to remain objective. I couldn't say, you know, Billy's one of my best friends, and so, you know, am I going to vote for him, you know, or Jonathan, you know, or how do I, you know, keep that barrier of objectivity? Mm-hmm. So I said, you know, I went through the various different channels, asking people and talking to people, found out who, you know, had the best traits as far as with the costuming and the fitness, because, you know, it's modern day, it was social media, you know, you can track down anybody. And I just, you know, presented it to each of them and asked them, would they consider being judges and panelists to talk about the two different aspects and be able to judge the two competitors as well. So it built on from there.
And one of those judges was IFBB Pro Victor Del Campo, correct?
That's correct. Vic and I actually formed a pretty good friendship along the way, and that actually was his very first foray into costuming.
Oh, was it? I was wondering.
But he got so into it and, you know, was so ready, you know, to learn all of the aspects of the costuming side before he, you know, went in as a judge, and just did a really great job. And he's a really great guy, always there, ready to give advice and help and support. And
The unique thing about Vic is, you know, he's covered in these tattoos, comic book tattoos. So he already had that kind of nerdy background, already in place. CrossFit was just a new kind of aspect of that. So, you know, he grew up loving comic books, and he has this great quote in the film. He says, "I always wanted to look like
character in the foreground."
Yeah, I always wanted to look like a superhero, not a background character. And so fitness and bodybuilding was, really related to that aspect of his life. You know, he loved comics so much that he wanted to look like a comic book character in it. So it was a huge motivation for him.
And I've heard that that same thing from various bodybuilders, that comic books were their first inspiration for getting into working out and getting into bodybuilding and competitive bodybuilding. I know, you know, I've spoken once or twice with Luke Sando, and he's often cited comic books as his, you know, his initial inspiration.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard of a lot of guys say that exact same thing. Now I don't know. Are you guys familiar with a film called Raising the Bar?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I haven't gotten a chance to see it, but I have seen a few bits and pieces here and there, and I've heard of it. So.
So I do a podcast with Mike and, well, it's Dave Pulcinella. We're next week we're recording Dave and Mike together. Mike was the creator of Raising the Bar. So Victor Del Campo was Dave's training partner in the first film, Raising the Bar 1. I watched that years ago, and I never forgot who Victor was since then. So when I heard his name and I saw him, I said, oh, there he is again.
He still looks good.
Yeah, he's holding it together for sure.
Yeah.
I like this concept you guys are talking about how there's a gap that you are bridging. I think that there's something interesting in there between, you know, normal people or people who feel that, you know, weights and training and growing muscle wasn't initially part of their life. I mean, a lot of the guys that I talk to on this show are guys that it was that way, that, you know, they played some type of a sport and then they got injured or whatever and they kept lifting and they fell in love with that. They were the jocks, basically. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't always have to be that way. You know, you could come at this from a lot of different places. And fitness in general, I think, is getting to be really popular with the mainstream. It makes sense to me, and excuse me for using the word, but it makes sense to me that the nerds found it.
Yeah, no. I think the interesting thing about this marriage of CrossFit, of cosplay, you know, costuming, and bodybuilding is that it provides a really unique why, a unique motivation for bodybuilders. I've always been into fitness. I'm not a bodybuilder, but I think the mainstream, looking from the outside in, you always go, why do you, you know, what's the point of, you know, putting your body through that, looking like that? This is a kind of a costuming is an interesting way to, it provides a really unique motivation for people, you know, well, I want to look like Wolverine. I want to look like Superman. I want to look like whoever.
Yeah. And it gives such a great dynamic, you know, it's, you know, bodybuilding is great on its own merits, but if you can incorporate a costume in, you know, into that, where you look like you belong in that costume, you play, you know, the part of, you know, a muscular superhero or, you know, the savage barbarian or, you know, whatever theme you want to choose, then, you know, that gives you a whole nother area of expression.
Yeah. I mean, when you show up to a convention like Dragon Con, where you've got 85,000 people crowding the streets of Atlanta, you know, and you're able to walk in there in your posing trunks, but you're also holding a giant foam sword and you're wearing a glowing yellow wig, and people just fawn on, I mean, the attention you get, and you look like you belong. Nobody questions what you're wearing. You don't, you're not an outcast. You're not a, you know, nobody's labeling you a freak. I see people in that situation, people like Jerry, like Vic, like James in the documentary, like Jonathan. You come alive when you embody those characters. But then you also get that sense of appreciation from the crowd. You know, they're telling you, you look great, and you do look great. So you're getting that adulation that, you know, maybe doesn't always come. And so you can, people will associate with, well, you're wearing a costume, you're a weirdo, whatever. I tell you, in those scenarios, if you're not wearing a costume, you're a weirdo. When you're standing in these hotel lobbies and of the conventions, and you know you're just a regular Joe, you're the guy that doesn't really belong. So it's a great way for people that feel, you know, in everyday life that they don't belong or they have no place, where they can go and be expressive and show their bodies off in places other than the gym,
and be accepted universally.
My mind is just blowing right now, just so you guys know. I'm just sitting here, my mind's just blowing.
Scott, you have to start thinking about what costume you're going to be preparing for tracking talk.
Now let's talk a little bit about these costumes. There was definitely a lot of information about what goes into making these costumes or purchasing the pieces for this costume. What I'm seeing in the film, you could go anywhere from $30 up to thousands.
Yeah, you can spend as much as you want to on a costume. I think the cool thing about it is everybody's welcome. So if this is your first time and you want to pop out a sewing machine and you've never done it before, you know, go for it. There's no judgments. But there are a lot of experts out there who spend, I would say.
Yeah, you look at areas like there's one costuming principle. It's called steampunk. And steampunks can spend literally tens of thousands of dollars on their costumes.
Wow.
Because it's all copper and brass gears and Victorian fashions. And none of this stuff is, you know, off the shelf. It is all handmade. And so the labor, the money, you know, the attention to detail that goes into some of these costumes is absolutely astounding.
I actually have one of my clients, he's a non-competitor, and I've had a couple people do this now. You know, usually when we have competitors, the goal is to get in shape for the show. I've had people specifically say, I want to get in shape for my Halloween costume. So this is not totally crazy talk.
No, it's not crazy talk. I mean, if anything, when you look at the reality of how many people that compete in bodybuilding and then how many are going to walk away with a first place or even second place trophy, right? It's not many in the grand scheme of the numbers. So then you got to look at everybody else, and this is just a great reason for them to show up at 5 a.m. in the gym and, you know, work legs, you know, because they want to look good in those posing trunks. It's just another motivation, another reason why. And I think that's why I find it so interesting. You know, it's easy to look and go, well, that's just silly. But it actually makes more sense as a justification for why you would put your body through hell to look like the Hulk.
Well, especially if you enjoy that stuff. So give me an idea, cost-wise, what would be a reasonable amount to consider spending on a costume?
Well, Jerry, I'll let Jerry walk you through his various costumes and what they cost him. Awesome. Start with what you start. What was your first costume, Jerry?
My first foray, you know, when I first made the commitment to getting into actual costuming and stuff like that, I wanted to just start small, you know, get some attention. I just did, you know, an old style Star Trek costume, you know, not going to be a huge attention getter, but it, you know, it would get me in with those groups of fans and stuff like that. And then I started stepping up I wanted to do a superhero, but yeah, I get picky in my details. So I never thought, you know, when I would see the superheroes portrayed, you know, a lot of them look fantastic, but I wanted to take it a little step further. Everyone wants to use spandex. I had to use stretch velvet. I mean, it's, you know, a crazy detail, but these are the things that, you know, customers actually, you know, have on their mind all the time. But I spent, for that first superhero costume, also 6 months, you know, dieting, working out, conditioning, so I would look the part in the costume and wouldn't have to have the muscle suit underneath that isn't going to fool anybody.
Well, how much did you spend on that costume?
Yeah, the first superhero I did was Black Adam. I think I spent somewhere in the neighborhood of about $850 for that
one.
Wow.
Okay. Wow.
But you had somebody else sew that one for you, right?
Right. And this before my mom found out what I was doing. You know, you've seen the documentary. You know, she's a show stealer.
Yeah. I got to say, now, guys, look out for Jerry's mom. Because she was my favorite person in the movie. She is so good.
She's everybody. I think, you know, as far as cost goes, you can spend as much or as little as you want. Material cost is a matter of going to Joann's Fabric or, you know, Hobby Lobby and spending $50 to $100 getting a pattern and sewing it yourself. I mean, you can go to Walmart and just buy a cheap Halloween costume if you want to try to get started in doing something.
And where you're going to find so much of the expense is in the skill necessary to bring your costume to fruition. Okay. So if it's sewing, you know, if it's adding in, you know, having different props made, things like that, if you don't have the skill, you got to find somebody who does. And chances are they're going to charge you.
That makes sense.
You know, a good example of the extreme is in the film, you have Jonathan, who's sort of the antagonist to Billy. He goes as He-Man is his costume. And so he hires a company called Blue Whale, which is a special effects company out of Atlanta, where we're from. The process to make that costume took about 2 months, 2 to 3 months. Everything from 3D modeling, the sword the He-Man holds, his belt. One of the artists there hand sculpts, Jonah hand sculpts the shoulder pauldron, the skull for He-Man. The process they go through is extraordinarily extensive. You know, they have a seamstress who's working in a completely different shop, who's making the cape, putting the boots together. They're casting the molds for all of these products and then, you know, airbrushing them, painting them. It's quite an extraordinary process. So the sky's the limit. You know, if you want to go as something extreme and you got the bucks, then why not go hire one of these special effects companies, these Hollywood companies that can make you a kick-ass costume. But if you don't have the money, you know, no big deal. There's a lot of places where you can just go buy.
Yeah, you can get creative with just things you can get at Walmart and still come up with an awesome costume. Like, I'll give you an example. I was at one of the cons one year. And I was at one of the parties. I see one guy standing there in just an ordinary referee's costume, but I only saw him from the back.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, that's kind of a boring thing. You know, he just got a referee costume on. Then he turns around and he's got a blind man's cane and glasses. And I'm just like, okay, that just became awesome.
Yeah. Instant creativity.
How many times have you screamed, "Are you blind, ref?"
That's good. That's good. So tell me a little bit about the filmmaking process. How, you know, this whole thing is just, it's just so slick the way you guys put it together, everything, the transitions, the music, the quality of the video, just everything about it. It's just so well done. How long did something like that take to make?
Sure. That's a good question. We started in February of 2017, I think it was our first shot. Dragon Con, where the competition was when it was held, was that Labor Day weekend. So it was the first weekend of September of that same year. We filmed pretty much entirely from February up until Dragon Con. My brother and I filmed most of it ourselves. So Jerry would, you know, I said, "Jerry, you got to call me and tell me when something important is going to happen."
Okay.
And so he'd just give me a heads up. We'd grab our gear and we would just go over there, the two of us, and film it if we needed to. Billy and Jonathan came on board about a month after February. Jonathan, at the time of filming, lived in LA. So we had a crew out there go shoot a little bit of him. And then Billy lives here in outside of Atlanta, so we were able to film him a little bit more frequently. But, you know, it's weekends, it's weeknights. It's just trying to keep track of those sort of pinnacle moments. Mm. You know, when is Jerry's mom going to be working on Billy's costume? When is Blue Well working on the He-Man costume, going there, filming? I think the thing about making a documentary is it's just dedication and consistency. It's really just a matter of sticking to it and filming a lot. The most difficult part of it is when you get into the editing room and you just have this pile of footage that you've got to go through and you've got to try to craft a story out of. You know, documentary is a little different than narrative filmmaking just being like a regular movie, in that in a regular movie, the script is written before the movie is made. Documentary, the script is written after the filming process.
So you have to see the story within just everything you've got.
Exactly. It was a pretty basic story to begin with. You know, this guy's going to have this competition. These two guys are going to compete in it to see who wins, right? Pretty basic. But just in that in and of itself, it lacks depth. And so what revealed itself to us through the process was this really the story of Jerry's why, you know, and Jonathan and Billy's why are they doing this? And that's where I talk about the impetus of being disenfranchised, feeling lesser than, growing up. Billy talks about being a fat kid when he was in middle school and not being able to climb the rope. And that is a story with heart. If you take a kid, if I tell you the story, I'm going to tell you a story about a kid, you know, who was overweight, made fun of. He plays Pokemon like a religion, you know. But he grows up to be a 260-pound massive, 6'4" massive muscle. You're like, wow, how did he go from that to that? That's an interesting story to me. You know, and the competing is just it's a backdrop to that story, you know. And Jonathan's an interesting dichotomy to Billy, because Jonathan wears his confidence different. Billy's very quiet, very introverted, very humble. Jonathan wears it a little differently. He's a lot more gregarious, a lot more confident, a lot more in your face. But he comes from a very similar background.
And you show that too. You show his human side. You show his like his nerdiness. You see it still.
Oh yeah. And so you get the human. Our goal is to tell the basic story of this competition, but really to tell the human side, like of these guys, their fears, they're scared. Is this going to work? You know, you have Billy, and I know a lot of bodybuilders can relate to this. I cannot imagine the balls it takes to put on a posing trunk, step on one of those stages, and pose in front of hundreds of people. I mean, the amount of courage it takes to do that, to me, I would imagine to most quote-unquote normal people, is staggering. And you have Billy, who's this quiet, introverted person who's extremely insecure, grew up as the fat kid, always sees himself as the fat kid, even now when he looks in the mirror. You're asking him to step on stage in front of hundreds of people in barely nothing, in flex and pose. That is a huge ask. I mean, for some people, you might as well be asking them to kill themselves. It's such a terrifying thing to do. And yet he summons the courage and he does it. I think that's a huge victory for him. And I think a lot of bodybuilders will be able to relate to that. And a lot of people, especially a lot of nerds, will be able to relate to that, you know, that overcoming that fear and doing something just outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. So what are you guys doing? The film is finished now, and what's the next steps? Where is it going to be?
Sure, it's a good question. We're almost finished. We're still polishing it.
Oh.
We have our friends and family screening this weekend, which I'm excited about. So we'll have a lot of the folks that were in the movie in the same room and getting to see the sort of finished product at this point. We've submitted to a lot of film festivals, so we're waiting to hear back and, you know, see what happens from there. And then we hope to just go a sort of traditional, maybe non-traditional distribution. You know, we're going to kind of wait and see what happens with the film festivals. But I would say if anybody's interested in following along, just go to the website and put your email in there, and we'll keep you posted as we continue the journey.
And what's the website again?
It's questofthemusclenerd.com.
Okay. What about social media? You guys on that?
Oh, yeah.
Muscle Nerds is, yes. We actually get a lot of traction from both Facebook and Instagram. So if just, yeah, if you search for Muscle Nerds LLC, and it's Muscle Nerds with a Z, and search us on Instagram or Facebook, we'll pop right up. It's got our emblem that's the brain and the barbells.
Now, is there anything else I'm missing here? We've hardly heard from Jared. Jared, you still with us over there?
He's the quiet guy. He's just telling me what to say off the.
He's the brains of the operation.
I'm gonna let him say hi. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm just making sure Matthew hits all the important points. I'm not sure he conveyed how weird Jerry is. Well, I was like, man, they have no idea how weird this guy is. Right here. And I say that with all the best love here, Jerry.
Jared, is there anything else we are missing?
I don't know. I mean, I think I know you have a huge bodybuilding audience and maybe not so many nerds out there. But I just hope they keep an open mind to this, and And I think a lot of people out there will find that maybe they have a home in wearing costumes and lifting up weights. You know, one of the cool things about the competition that we didn't even talk about is the characters that they portray. Mm. And a portion of the competition is being those characters, being He-Man, and
talk about
being judged. Trainer Red. Yes,
that's good.
The competition was judged in three phases. It was their bodies, it was their costumes, and it was their characters, how they portrayed them on stage. So I think one thing bodybuilders can relate to in competition is the performance aspect. And sometimes they might be like, well, I don't know what to do on stage. Do I just flex here, then walk here? Well, this gives you a real reason, a real a character to play. It gives you moves to do. You know, it gives you something to study. So I think that's exciting for a lot of people.
Yeah. You know.
And you actually get scored on it, whereas most bodybuilding competitions, the evening show is just for the audience, which is fun, but there's no benefit.
That's true. That's true.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, that was noted in the film, too, about that not only were they there to flex, but, I mean, basically, you couldn't just throw a costume on and then hit some poses. You had to be, you know, He-Man, for instance. You needed to show that.
Exactly. And I think one of the exciting things about this new style of competition, if you will, is to see how far people can go with it. You know, to see their characters, to see their costumes. You know, I think you'll see in the film it's at its infancy as far as the actual presentation of the competition itself. We're excited to see, you know, the second competition, the third competition, to see the competitors get really, really creative with how they're portraying those characters and their costumes and everything that goes with that. I think there's a huge, huge potential for just entertainment for people that love both bodybuilding and cosplay. And, you know, I think of someone like Kai Greene out there.
He would have won Mr. Olympia.
I think of him, and I think of, like, you know, how much he loves performing and the characters he does, and then to see, like, that have a place in an actual competition moving forward in some form or fashion is I think really interesting, to combine both the performance aspect of it and the body aspect of it, and to have the performance aspect really mean something in the judging criteria.
So you guys had the first contest. This is done. It's happened. You've got it all on film. It's in the movie. Is there plans for another one?
Oh, I do hope so. Okay. We're looking at taking this thing to various other conventions. There's Heroes Con that's in Charlotte, North Carolina. There's Colossal Con that's in Sandusky, Ohio, and a few others that all expressed interest in actually having a full-blown competition. And we should probably talk about why there's only two in the film.
Yeah, there's only two competitors in the movie because, you know, the real obstacle was not so much convincing bodybuilders that this was cool. It's convincing nerds that it's okay to incorporate fitness into a convention. Hmm. And it's because of that PTSD. You know, there's such a negative connotation with fitness, with bodybuilding in that community, that any outside presence coming in feels like an intrusion to them. It reminds them of that past, that history.
Sure.
So the real obstacles for the competition moving forward aren't so much finding bodybuilders to do it or finding CrossFit players to do it, is convincing conventions that it's not going to ruin the culture of the convention. It's not going to turn it into the next Mr. Olympia, you know, or Arnold Classic. It's, you know, it's different. There's a lot of nerds. There's a lot of cosplayers at these conventions already that would love to compete. And they've emailed us. We've had so many people email us and say, I can't wait to compete in the next one, because I think that to have their lifestyle validated in any way where they can, I mean, can you imagine, like, you spent all this money, all this time, all this effort working on your body, working on your costume, and finally something comes along and says, hey, I could actually get a trophy for this. I could find
validation for, you know, all of my efforts.
Hmm. Yeah. I think it's a very unique group, and it's a very unique opportunity. It's just a matter of finding the right place for it. I think that's what Jerry's up against right now.
Right on. Well, do you guys have any parting thoughts here? Because I've been just kind of following along with you and just feeling this whole interview out. Because, like I said, for me, this is uncharted territory.
No, I'm like I say, every day I delight in seeing how it grows and how it changes, and getting new people on board all the time, and everybody brings something new to the table. And so it's like, for Muscle Nerds, we'll have a rather surprising social media event coming up this Memorial Day. I won't say anything more than that, but keep your eyes peeled. I think you'll enjoy it.
Interesting. So once again, that's questofthemusclenerd.com. You guys can go there and submit your email, and then from there they can follow along. And what is it? Muscle Nerds LLC on social media?
Yes, on Instagram and on Facebook.
All right, guys. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me this evening and explaining all this, because this has been a lot of fun.
Well, thank you, Scott. We appreciate the time and the opportunity as well.
Absolutely. I'm very grateful.
All right, guys. Well, for another episode of Advices Radio with Jerry Peacock, Matthew, and Jared Young for Quest of the Muscle Nerds, Muscle Nerd. Guys, check this out. It's coming out soon. We will see you soon.
Advices Radio Network.